As some of you may have guessed, the reason you're listening to a different opening tune today is because we have something different lined up for you. We're going to do a little bit of a retro episode. Woohoo! Can I get a cheer, guys? Not excited? Okay.
Your woohoo sort of really came out of nowhere. It was like Thanos from the Avengers. It just a hole opened up and a woohoo just came out.
Well, I was trying to make it up. Natural. I didn't want to, like, you know. Yeah. As always, I've got my awesome co-host with me, Hey Shaban. Welcome aboard.
Hello, listeners.
And on this side, we've got Bartha. Hello there. Welcome back.
Hey guys. So I've been on a bit of a whirlwind trip and I had a lot of fun. So I have a few stories that kind of fit into this episode. So I'm really kicked about that. Also, hey Chirag, hey Shaban.
I want to let the listeners know that in case his stories do not fit into this context, I will edit them out. Idea of doing a retro episode came about because we were kind of reminiscing a little bit. We were also kind of looking at different trends that are happening in the world. And we kind of started reminiscing about some of the old technologies and where they were. Stuff we grew up with, stuff you guys may have grown up with, stuff you guys may have heard about, but not actually seen in person. In which case, congratulations, you're a very nice and healthy young person.
So we had this whole discussion before we started this episode between the three of us, before we hit record. A couple of points that both of you made, which is quite important before we get into the episode, is that we are where we are with tech because of where we started. And it's important, I don't know whether it was Partha that said it or Chirag, whether it was you, but it's important to remember where we come from so that we know where we're going. And I think covering retro tech is a really cool way of doing that.
Okay, I'd like to take ownership of that. Thank you very much.
Well, it's debatable, buddy. It's debatable. You know, we'll have to see who recorded what when.
To kick off, I thought we would be great to share what our oldest or maybe even the first computer memory is. And I realize that that pun is not fully intentional, but, you know, your first memory of a computer, I think, is a better way to put it. So, Partha, do you wanna start?
I remember this rather distinctly. In the 90s, there used to be a company called Zenith. My dad used to be the regional sales manager for Zenith in India. He got home one of the first laptops, something that he was supposed to test into the market. Now, Zenith have been making machines since the 80s, but in the 90s, when the laptop came home, it was this really slick, at that time, big machine that had an LCD. It had a TV screen that was monochrome, and it wasn't green. It was black and white. It wasn't green and black. It was black and white, and it was just, you know. So I remember him bringing that laptop home in this big bag. It was a big suitcase kind of bag, and it had, there were power bricks and there were wires, and he opened up the laptop and it there was a keyboard attached to the machine, and I was like, wow, because the only machine that I used to use at that point was this desktop, which also, by the way, was a Zenith. It was a pre-assembled machine, which was a big thing at that point. And we used to have 8 MB of disk space and 512 KB of RAM, and it was like, wow. And it was pretty intense. Like, I used to use that, and I remember logging onto the forums. I don't know if anybody remembers this, but the bulletin boards at that time were pretty huge. Yeah. And
PHPBB.
Yeah, PHPBB. We used to actually dial in and log onto the PHPBB, and I used to get the text version of a search, so to speak, of, you know, how if you had to go and find some stuff. And that is literally the oldest memory of me. And I was about 10, 12, something like that. So yeah, that is literally one of the oldest, fondest memories I have of computers. The oldest memory I have is basically of this old, the first desktop that my dad got home, and we used to use it for word processing. I remember we had WordStar, I think three or four at that point in the, again, early 90s. And it used to be like the word processing, and we used to write letters and stuff like that. It was really awesome.
Shaban?
The first time I saw a computer was in a computer lab. I walked into school. I'm a modern high kid. It was is just a whole bunch of white machines, and it was air conditioned, carpeted, super quiet, looked like a real clean room. And it just, when you looked at a computer screen and you looked at the keyboard, I mean, a lot of kids would, you know, I don't know what everybody else saw, but for me, it was just like this world of possibility, like this portal into the unknown. And you had all these programs, and I had no idea what any of them did. And we were supposed to obviously do basic programming. I don't know if anyone's ever done if-then-else statements in basic, but I think that was the reason why they got computers for us to work on. But we all ended up playing games on it, unfortunately. And some kids would get games from home, and then they would load them up, and they would play them. And that's where I was introduced, obviously, to the concept of piracy, because we would then copy those games. Yeah, a little criminal me decided that I like computers quite a bit. And I've sort of been interested in tech ever since.
I think my oldest memory, without revealing too much about my age, is, you know, the early 80s. My dad got home an IBM PC. So yes, pre-assembled as well. Used to be called the PC XT. And I think we got it a couple of years after it actually came out in the US, I think. 128 KBs of RAM, 8 MB like hard drive. Oh my God. Right? And I think it was really interesting because, you know, my dad's he's a spreadsheets whiz, right? Like, he's always been that. And I kind of, like, as I'm recalling this memory, realized that one of the things I saw him do on that computer was, you know, navigate with an arrow across a spreadsheet in Lotus 1-2-3, right? And do all these, like, computations and stuff, and which was just so fascinating for me. But yeah, I mean, most of the early memories of that computer. And yeah, I had a white computer. It was a green screen with a little turbo button. We had all these like floppy disk drives, right, that we would boot into to play games and stuff. And we'll talk about all that in a little bit. But I also want to, you know, kind of remember, Shaban, you were talking about school, like in a computer lab. And I'm just mentioning it because I think it's just a funny memory for me. In high school, I took C++. But, you know, I took C++, and we had this like sort of like a LAN of, it wasn't connected to the internet or anything, but, you know, it was a nice little network within the school. And I won't name the program, but we discovered that there was a program that could kind of break into open ports across the computer. So we would just, you know, spend lab turning people's screens upside down and randomly restarting their computers while they were trying to work on lab projects.
You did that in fourth grade?
No, not in fourth grade, in high school.
In high school? Oh, geez, okay. You had me worried there for a second, buddy, of like, holy shit.
Yeah, I probably should have just said yes. I think I would have come out better.
No, okay. But,
wow. you missed your chance, bro.
Yeah, I missed that one there. But yeah, in high school. But it was so hilarious to watch, you know. Anyway, so yeah, fun times. But I think, you know, I did want to relate to my oldest memory, which was that PC XT, because I think I used that computer, I think, for a very long time before we upgraded.
My experience of actually machines like that was that you rarely got an upgrade as quickly as we get them nowadays. What you got lasted you for at least a good 3 to 4 years. Like,
oh, more than that.
Well, I'm being nice. it was pretty insane. And you mentioned floppy drives. I remember the entire onset of how floppy drives kind of moved on from where they were. Like, they started off at that 5.25 thin little thing that stored less than an MB.
Yeah, that's where the idea of the floppy drive came from, because its successor was not exactly, you know,
floppy.
And it's also interesting that, you know, to this day, most save icons looks like a floppy drive, because that's what you did. You saved them to a floppy drive.
So. Backups to floppy drives was the rage. Like, I used to have a box of floppy drives. Well, I wouldn't call them floppy drives. The 3.5-inch, you could store like 1.4 MB on those each.
I think it was 1.44 MB.
1.44, yeah. There were 3.5-inch 1.44 MB drives. I used to use those to back up every single Word document that I created. Growing up, after we reached a state in computing where we used to use an address book on the computer. It was called Instant Recall, IR for short. The entire family used to save all the notes for my dad's business on that software. And I remember my dad would say at the end of the day, son, go and back up the computer. Make sure you do IR first. And I had 10 floppy drives to back up the hundreds and hundreds of data names that were stored on Instant Recall onto those floppy drives, because that's the only way you would save it. Because the moment you switched off the machine, chances are you'd probably never see those names again. Backups became second nature to me growing up. Like, everything would have to have an external copy of it. And now the cloud does that for me. But I'm just saying that, you know, it's insane how much I relied on saving externally rather than depending on the machine.
I can still remember that 5 1/4 floppy and how you had to like save it across multiple ones, and then you would sit with a little felt pen and mark 1 out of 4 and 2 out of 4.
That's right. And I remember when we used to get games from friends, and we could actually sit and do that. You could split the entire game into multiple different discs and actually label them in the order. Otherwise, you know what? If you copied them in the wrong order, the game wouldn't work.
You had to put in the first one, and then it'll prompt and be like, okay, now enter disc 2. And then you put the second one in, and then you do that. Da, da, da. And then it's like, okay, now you can start playing. And then you would play with whatever was loaded into memory. And then suddenly it would be like, please enter disc 3, because you know this is all the memory I had so far. anyway, since we're talking about games, Shaban, do you want to like share with us your early memories of games and the stuff you used to play?
My earliest memory of games was not on computers, though. It was always on consoles. I used to have one of those 16... Sorry, not even 16. It was a real pleb. 8-bit Nintendos. And my first memory was Mario, I think. Followed by Contra and a bunch of other console game titles, yeah. And my first memory of a game on a PC was Prince of Persia, I think. The first serious game. Before that, it was everything that was in the computer lab, which was basically Digger. There was this weird tank game. You had to like blow up the other guy's tank or something. I think there was Snake. I'm not sure. I think there was a version of Snake in there.
Did you ever play Kong?
Nope. Kong was too advanced, I think. We were talking like super basic titles that barely ran on the computer lab PCs.
The same thing. I remember actually my first gaming. So despite having leapfrogged the entire PC timeline from my friends, a couple of my friends from where I stayed. So I grew up in India. I didn't grow up here in the UAE. Over there, access to all of this stuff was pretty expensive. So when one of my friends actually got a computer that was capable of running the Prince of Persia, the first ever Prince of Persia, fluidly, we never left his house. We went to his place. I remember playing that game. And there was also another F1 game around the same timeline. That was I think it was a Ubisoft game. That's a bit of a blur for me right now. But Prince of Persia was the thing that stuck with me, because I remember trying to play that game on my machine. And I had the black and white machine, remember? And I remember when I pressed the right button for the prince to run right, he'd run, stop, run, stop, run, stop. But when we played it on my friend's machine and I pressed the right button, he just run and continue running. And I'm like, wow, he can actually do that? And I remember making that outburst and be like, that's how he's supposed to run. I was like, no, you come over and play in my place, he'll run, stop, run, stop, run, stop. And I actually learned how to play Prince of Persia
in slow-mo.
Run, stop, run, stop, run, stop. That's wow. The funniest memory I have of actually playing Prince of Persia ever. Because we had monochrome machines, I think Carmen Sandiego was one of my first ever text-based RPGs that I still play, and I love that game. It was a good general knowledge-based game, and I just completely enjoyed myself playing that game. So there is this Wayback Machine. There are a couple of websites on that allow you to play these old games in a simulator online, and they work just beautifully.
I talked about the PCXD and playing games off the floppy drives, and so I used to play games like Qbert, which was this guy that would jump down like this these tiles, and you had to like convert them colors and all sorts of funny things. Of course, Frogger and stuff like that. I had a game called Moon Buggy, and this is a memory I have. Maybe I don't have the right name of the game in my head, but you know, I remember Moon Buggy, and it was this like little 2D tank-like thing on the crater of the moon, and you kind of had to like hop over and stuff. But this is the kind of stuff we used to be able to run off of floppies. You know, we talked about like how, you know, your computers and stuff lasted way longer, right? And so I sidestepped the 3.1, like the Windows 3.1 revolution, because I was still playing on the PCXT. And so when I remember when I got it, like my house was the center of attention, because everybody would come over to play Hangman and like Moon Buggy and whatever else. And then eventually, like, people just stopped showing up. And that's when I realized that, you know, like a new computer wave had hit, which was when 3.1 came out. And then essentially, like, we started ditching our computer to go and like, oh my God, graphical user interface. And like, there are these like folders and files. And All of that fun stuff.
Boxes with X's on it.
Yeah, and I think that's when I think games like Doom and stuff like started to show up. I have some memory of playing Prince of Persia, Doom, like at friends' houses, and sucking at it. We were playing games by hitting X and W to jump and stuff, right? Because it just was not that fully featured. And now suddenly you could do all these fun things.
And you had a mouse to control the character. And how do you use a keyboard and a mouse together? I mean, what? Is that even possible?
Too much
multitasking. And of course, the most important thing in Doom is the profanity and the partial nudity, which was unheard of back in the day.
Way to go, Shaban.
I'm sorry, you cannot be talking about Doom, and you have to mention that. That's the entire reason that half-adolescent kids played Doom to begin with. They were like, okay, this game has profanity. I mean, we need to get this game, among other things.
Now, I remember Wolfenstein 3D, the first Wolf, and I remember my mom walking into the house, me playing this on our machine then, and she saw that when I was shooting the bad guys, I'm not going to say the names, there would be blood all over and be like, you're playing such a disgusting game. There's blood everywhere. Switch off this game. And I'd be like, but it's fine. It's not real. But yeah, that was the extent of gore in games. And, you know, it was like, oh my God, how are you doing this kind of stuff? And then you hear news of late of Call of Duty and the realism. And anyway, no.
Call of Duty.
Take this.
No, but it's interesting too, because there was a whole controversy, I think, I want to say like 7 or 8 years ago, right? What was the name of that game? It's the one where you drive around and you steal cars, and then there are
GTA.
GTA, thank you. Yes, Grand Theft Auto. That's what I was looking for. The controversy, I think that was the last one. And then since then, like now everybody's just like, yeah, whatever. You kill people in games. It's fine.
Before GTA, the controversy was around Carmageddon. There was a game called Carmageddon where you had to run people down. And then obviously
it was
gory. Yes. All the guys remember that as well. It was very controversial when it came out. Because it was just unheard of that you're sort of running people over. They're just walking down the street, and people would come up with all these creative ways of like making the cars fly and run the poor virtual blobs running around that was supposed to be people. It was quite sick if you really look at it now, but back in the day, it was quite enjoyable.
I think it's still enjoyable.
I'm sure it is. There's obviously, I think people, well, you know what? I think things have changed, but there's always this element, the base element that remains. So yeah, I agree with you. There's a base element that will remain. So people may have moved from Doom and Carmageddon to like killing zombies, and then actually the zombie genre is still doing really well right now. But yeah, in the middle it was aliens and then zombies now.
I want to quickly touch on sort of the operating systems and applications section and stuff that we remember and where it is now. We kind of sidestepped the whole DOS thing, but
DOS was literally the only reason that I ever got into learning how to code or writing command line kind of stuff. So when I was in school, I think in the fifth grade, and they introduced the computers at that time, because that's when our school could actually invest in a computer lab, and we had like 10 brand new computers sitting in our room and 3 teachers looking after us, you know, to make sure that we didn't do anything we were not supposed to. And they taught us everything from basic to using basic DOS commands. And yeah, I mean, I grew up on DOS, and I still, so a lot of games that we used to play, a lot of the applications that we used to work with were all DOS based and not Windows based for the longest time. Even though there was Windows 3.1 and all of the fun stuff that was coming out, we preferred using DOS because it was far more stable. It still is. And it was just so much more reliable, because you knew what you typed in would work. It's not there were no tricks around, you know, visual tricks involved. It was just simple, plain text, and what you typed in is what you would get.
And for me as well, I think, like, I grew up, I mean, obviously started out with DOS, and so, you know, the good days of CD and you know, whatever, change directory and copy files and all the stuff that we just executed on the command line. Actually, even to this day, I mean, it's stuff that I use. But again, that's, you know, in the case of servers now, and not so much my own computers. As I mentioned, like I kind of sidestepped Windows 3.1 altogether, which was like the first like UI wrapper that they had done. And I remember, I think, I could be wrong here, but I think in Windows 3.1 it was like that. But Like it would actually boot into DOS, and then you would then like flip over and get the
and then you type WIN to get into Windows.
Yeah, exactly. I remember early 2000s when I started playing around with Linux, and you know, Linux unfortunately never ever really became a massively user facing operating system, and you know, the world's lost out, I think. But I mean, such a powerful thing, and the command line is just so powerful. And I think like, and I think it's just something that like, you know, I've tried to explain to many people, and just, you know, it's like, but I can just right click and do that. Like, why are you doing it like this? And it just was one of those things, you know, all those extra keys and extra options and like, all those things, there's stuff that you couldn't even do in the UI that you could accomplish in a single command, right? And I think for me, that was just so fascinating. I remember breaking my computer multiple times over when I tried to install Linux. But I think it really shapes the way I've been playing around with technology and stuff, because I'm more about like, oh, I want to try it out. Like, let me just like get my hands on it. What's the worst thing that'll happen, right? I'll just format the drive and start over, which I've done a lot of. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've always been a command line guy.
To your point about the command line, I think a lot of people don't understand is the whole reason we have user interfaces is because you needed the command line to do a lot more, a lot faster. So even though you clicked something, there would be something in the background happening, which was essentially happening on a command line. That's how we then eventually ended up with Windows and where we are today. Your phone runs Linux, essentially. If you're using Android, it runs Linux. If you're using iOS, it's probably running something on Unix, which is, again, similar.
Yeah.
They have the similar genesis there. You can still access the command line on certain Android phones, on certain ROMs. You can type in the word shutdown and your phone will shut down. Well, the right command. I don't remember what the right command is right now. But the whole point with the command line was also that you could get your computer to do shit that it would never do in the user interface. So if it wasn't listening, there's just no way. It's impossible once you have access to a privileged command line. It's impossible for it to not to listen. No matter what it was doing, you could shut that shit down and just, you know, get it to do what you want. And none of that has changed. I was watching an episode of Westworld yesterday. But if you haven't seen the show, you should definitely watch it. It's fascinating. It's about AI and how it becomes sentient. And it's all set in this amusement park, which is themed like an old Western set. In that, they have this scene which they were showing the AI doing its thing and it was trying to shut down some people. And all of that was set on a command line. Even though it was set hundreds of years in the future, it was all shown to be on a command line. And it's fascinating because it all started there. And even though we've been, you know, generations of computers have come since then, the command line's not gone anywhere. And I don't think that will change for a long time to come.
Do you know what my favorite use of the command line, especially on Windows, was? Stopping the restart after Windows update before it could get there. So I had to be super quick, couple of shortcuts, terminate shutdown, and it would just like, oops, okay, keep using the computer.
Nice.
I mean, I think I used it in the early days when I started working as well, back when, you know, Windows XP was a thing. Can you imagine Windows XP, how old that feels?
If you guys want to ever play with Windows XP, please come into my office.
Oh, I still have a copy of Windows XP, dude.
Oh, no, I'm good, thanks.
Oh, okay.
that world far behind and happier for it.
It worked. It did.
Especially after the fiasco that was Windows NT.
Yeah,
that was good stuff. Do you guys remember your favorite Windows screensaver?
Pipes.
Pipes and walls. The maze, that was one of my favorites.
Oh, forget all that, sorry. Toaster, flying toasters, that was my favorite Windows screensaver.
But that, I'm assuming that was a custom, or was it like a Windows one?
No, of course it was custom, but it was the most popular thing in our school. There were flying toasters everywhere. Yes, it was super popular. I can't believe that nobody outside our school. Clearly, this is not a thing.
No, maybe it was just a modern high thing.
Here's what I think. My conspiracy theory is that every school probably has its own version of a flying toaster screensaver. So if you probably go from Emirates to modern high, that the screensaver would change, but the fanaticism around that screensaver is probably just still the same. Among the geeks, obviously, some of them just couldn't give a
guys,
shit.
Guys, one second. This is a retro episode, not a high school war episode. Let's dial it back. I don't want people to throw shit at us, and I can't take sides. People hear this episode and go like, you guys give too much airtime to like modern high or something.
Okay, see, now you're instigating and not me.
Of course I am. I didn't go to school in Dubai, so I can afford to.
I mean,
to
now the our own guys are going to step up. The IHSR guys will be like, then, you know, it's just all out war now, dude. It's just... Does anyone remember the Mac? The iMac?
Sorry, I was a PC guy through and through. The only time I actually saw a Mac for the first time was in 2000-something. When I was driving through a petrol pump and they had the first ever Mac Cyber Cafe. This is in Bombay in Bandra, and there was this one petrol pump that had a Cyber Cafe that was only Macs. And it was those, you know, the multicolored Macintoshes, you know, the all-in-one.
Yeah, the candy iMac.
Yeah, the candy ones. They had four of those. So that was my first ever interaction with an Apple machine.
Cool. What was your first reaction?
Why is this even a thing?
Oh, wow. Okay. You didn't like it.
It was complete. So I've been a PC guy through and through, right? So it was completely for me something of a like, how am I even supposed to get anything done because everything's on the wrong side, like literally. And there's no start button. Why is there no Windows button?
That's fine. For me, it wasn't the user interface. It was just the fact, the way it looked. I remember going to a friend's house. She had an iMac, and I looked at it and I was like, a computer can look like that? I mean, it's so tiny and compact. You know, it didn't have a separate box sitting underneath or beside it. And that was really cool, because what Steve Jobs did was he showed us that computing devices could be really incredibly sexy looking or very well integrated. And yes, of course, I still don't use any Apple products because they're great products, but it's a personal taste thing. But the credit needs to be given here. The guy just, computers before that used to just look like little square screens with lines everywhere and slits where the floppy goes in, and that was it. And they were just ugly things. If we're talking about retro tech, we need to acknowledge Apple's contribution to it. We wouldn't have a lot of this whole idea that aesthetics are important without them.
That iMac, by the way, just celebrated 20 years. You know, a lot of people paying tribute to that machine and stuff. And I think it's super interesting, and it's great that you called it out, because not only, I mean, you're talking the iPhone, but in fact, even the iPod Wave that came out later, like all of this was built on that iMac. I was also a Windows user for a very long time. Like my first sort of really hands-on experience, I mean, I was aware of like all the stuff happening in the world of computing, but I started playing with the Macs when I started working at the university newspaper, and it was like, it was all iMacs, right? Because all design work used to happen on it. And that's when I started playing with it, and I honestly like never gone back. It was tough at first, but I did own a PC in between somewhere along the way, but I've been primarily like an Apple user since those days. There are so many memories associated with early internet days, but I think also like, you know, what started out as a revolution back in the day, getting everybody connected and not computing in isolation. I remember when we upgraded to Windows 95, it came with, we got dial-up like the same day. And it was just so fascinating to begin to start using not just a computer where you sat and did computing things, like, and the computing things are your calculations and spreadsheets and Word, but then also like to communicate, which is something that was like a 10-step process, right? Because you wrote a Word document and you either printed it on, we didn't really talk about dot matrix printers, but you know, you printed them on those like exceedingly annoyingly loud printers, and then you took it and handed it in to somebody, right? And then that's how you communicated whatever it is you were doing.
The internet was there for a while. It's just that the graphical version of the internet that you refer to started getting more prolific around the time that the Windows 95 came in. I used to log on to the internet and run Yahoo searches on a text-based format. You remember I was mentioning PHPBB and stuff. So we used to do Yahoo searches in text format.
Wait, so Yahoo initially wasn't... I mean, again, I don't know the history of Yahoo, but so it wasn't a search engine when they launched. They were text-based system.
So you could literally do searches through text-based interfaces by dialing up.
Oh, cool. Wow. I didn't know that.
And I remember dialing up as early as something in the early 90s.
I mean, I remember Yahoo, like, you could actually... There was actually a directly listing of all the web pages on the internet, right? Like, you could actually go to, like, A, and then, like, AA, and, like, drill it down, and drill it down, and drill it down, and that's how you discovered the internet.
There were, like, about 100 and something odd websites that we could access, and... That was like a lot, because there was so much information and everything was text-based, and you had to scroll through every single line, and it was insane. It worked beautifully and it was amazing.
And it was fast.
Because everything was text-based.
Yeah, I'm harked back to my dial-up days every time I log in, actually. So, yeah, those memories are still very fresh in my mind.
I remember MTNL in India. Mera telephone nahi lagta.
Wow, I didn't know that was a thing. Okay.
But, you know, back in the day, and so we used to pay for dial-up by the minute, right? And I remember you had to plan before you sat down on the internet. Right, because every minute that you sat there thinking about something costed you, I think it was like 18 dirhams an hour or so. I forget what that. At some point it was 18 dirhams, and you would just like speed through it as quickly as you can because you know every minute counted. And then everything would stop working, and you'd be like, "Oh my god!" Like I'm, and then some, you know, and the phone would ring.
That was the most annoying thing. Or you've put a very long, like this is, let's say, a couple of megabytes worth of files or one file. This amazing game that you wanted or whatever. And it's downloading and it's reached 98%. And then, you know, someone's picked up the phone. It's like, hey, are you on the internet? Yes, I was on the internet. I'm not on the internet anymore. Thank you so much. I'll have to re-download everything. And I think after that happened to enough people, someone's like, you know what, this shit needs to stop. So somebody invented the download manager. And FileZilla was born, probably, from a similar story.
the fact that you could resume a download after, like, you'd got interrupted.
You just complete your file 2%.
Oh, my God, frustration. Yeah.
You guys had pay by the minute. I never had anything by like that. So MTNL would just give us like a package, like saying, okay, you could download only up to 80 MB in a month kind of situation, and that's about it.
Yeah, we've been suffering the wrath of he who shall not be named for the last 20-something years, where we, and again, let's rewind. I think there's a lot that's done really well. But I believe that it's time for things to change. There are certain things which are not okay.
If it helps, I mean, I keep, so I've been seeing this conversation a lot recently about it. And I will just add that, like, that there was official confirmed news that at least a couple people are in conversation with the TRA. Something's in the works. So I'm hopeful, or I'm trying to be hopeful, because, yeah, it's extremely frustrating. I think it's fascinating today to look back at the early days of the internet, and yes, frustrations aside, to see what that medium has enabled. For technology in general, but also for services and so many other things, right? Just something as simple as the fact that today we're sharing our opinions and our commentary on technology and able to share it with the world. And I don't think when I started dialing in to the internet in that way and looking at Yahoo directories or the first like GeoCity sites, which, oh my God, HTML was so fascinating to me. I don't think I envisioned this in those days.
I miss it, honestly. Like, I remember the first logging into those GeoCities sites, and then people started doing MySpace pages, and then there was all these animations. Like, you'd log on to someone's site, and it was just animations in your face. There's like a little disco happening on the screen. Like, there was like snowflakes coming down, and you'd put your cursor, and I was just like, wow. There's people would spend so much time curating those pages, right? And now you log into Facebook, and every damn profile is exactly the goddamn same thing, and there's nothing there. I feel the soul is being sucked out.
My favorite to this day in the early GeoCities, in the early HTML, when you could like play with HTML, was the flashing new thing. Like, you put up a new link and you would put like this little flashing or colorful new with an exclamation point next to it, so people would know that something new.
Kind of like a GIF.
I remember that.
Pre the days of like the push notifications and all that. And I remember, by the way, like spending hours looking for the right new, because I mean, I didn't design one myself, so I would just sit through, played with clip art, like to try and fashion my own new, and I couldn't animate it, so then I just chucked it. And then finding and stealing of somebody else's website, like a new that I really liked.
My fondest memory of the UI based internet was actually when I moved from the CLI version of IRC to the GUI version of IRC. Along with IRC, in the GUI version came ICQ. I'd make friends and play text-based games on IRC internationally, by the way. And these would be people from all over the world who'd be on the same chat system. And we'd use ICQ to kind of stay in touch with the people outside of IRC. And And I think that was probably one of the first messengers that I used. And then, of course, Yahoo came in with its own messenger. And
MSN Messenger was the Tinder of our generation. At least in Dubai, it was. I don't know about the rest of the world. But yeah, some variation of it, it was. You couldn't talk to girls back then over the phone, but you could text them on their computers, and no one would be the wiser, not the parents, not their siblings. There's nobody on your side that would be the wiser. And so a lot of the flirting in schools happened on MSN. And here's the thing, Facebook status messages, before that, we actually had MSN status messages. We had special characters. We had people going online, offline, like a freaking disco light, just to get someone's attention. You know, like, hey, I've gone online, offline, 25 times. Are you going to acknowledge something and say hi to me? Because if you didn't, the next day there'll be an issue at school. Things have changed. Technology's changed, but things have actually remained the same as far as human beings go.
Exactly the same.
I have a question. Weirdest email address that you can publicly accept you had?
Oh, I didn't do that. No. I was very, I just used my name. Oh, I'm serious.
Oh, come on.
I wish I had something for you.
No.
I wish I did. Yeah, I really didn't, dude. I don't know.
Come on.
I may not have envisioned a lot of things about the internet and everything, but somehow the concept of honeysweetie_83 like did not seem like something I wanted to use. Like, honestly, right? Like, I just, you know, and can you imagine, by the way, that...
So I'm assuming y'all don't want to know mine.
No, but why don't you share yours?
Okay, no. So mine wasn't Honey Sweetie or anything. It was def_leopard, DEFF_LEPPARD, at Hotmail and at Yahoo, and when Gmail launched, even at Gmail as well. I don't have access to them anymore, obviously, but that was my first. I was like a true blue rock guy, and I used to listen to Def Leppard a lot, and I was like, man, I want that email address. And when I got it, I was like... pumped to the core.
I'm sure you pissed off Def Leppard to no end. They logged onto Hotmail. They were like, who is this a-hole who's taking our emails from us? You squatter.
Back in those days, you could have so easily got your name, right? Like, today it's super hard, right? At least, you know, considering...
Oh, it's really easy for me. Like, there's so many people named Shaban, unfortunately. So, like, I log into every website, I got my name there, like, haha.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm, like, considering some of us. Back then, everybody didn't want their name. Like, they wanted everything under the sun except their name, numbers, letters, all this other stuff. Which today, like, you're forced to have.
Well, the thing is, I'll explain this to you, Chirag, and I see the appeal. Because for a lot of people, an email address was a call sign. So you didn't want, you know, if you look at Top Gun, and people... they didn't call Tom Cruise by his name. They call him Maverick. So your email address when you gave it out was a call sign. So if you had a cool name, it counted for something. And I think that's one of the reasons why people ended up being really creative.
I always thought it was like really weird to like when someone would be like, hey, so how do I reach out to you? And you say like, I don't know. At least Maverick was still okay, but like.
So that's why I have my new, my call sign is essentially my name and my initials, and that's how what I kind of associate. And I get that pretty easily on all the websites now, Partha NS.
Yeah. See, what people would do, people will mash that up. So they'll use their name and then they'll add like one alphabet behind it. So it'll be like Partha X. And you'll be like, oh, X. Very mysterious.
This is coming from experience, isn't it, Mr. Shaban X? Like you're making it sound like you're talking about other people.
No, definitely. Definitely talking about other people. My own deeds reflected on other people. I found it really handy because when Facebook came along and my relatives would try and hunt me down on Facebook, my original name wasn't there. There was no last name there for them to find me. And that was my first... inadvertent foray into the whole concept of privacy.
I'm relating this to what Partha said also about the IRC world and other worlds as well. Like you had these chat rooms and things. You actually went out and met strangers like online, of course, but like connected with them over interests. So you would have a chat room that like they all liked the same game or the same movies or whatever. And then you would stay in touch with them, whether it was ICQ or MSN. In the US, you had AOL.
Yeah, that's true.
You had a chat list full of people like you met online, and it was such an interesting thing. And then so that's why when Facebook came out and the way, I mean, okay, I know that there was MySpace and Friendster and all that stuff before it.
What's MySpace?
The predecessor to Facebook.
Ah.
It was the same thing. You had your own homepage, and people looked you up by your username and left you comments and likes and you know all that stuff.
I used to use something called Orkut.
Orkut came out, yeah, that was the Google one, and it became popular in India.
Yeah, it was much, much later.
At that point, you wanted to be discovered in some ways before all the parents showed up. But like, you wanted to be discovered, you wanted to find all these people, and now we're doing the exact opposite. All of us are running away from this thing. I want to be hidden, I don't want to be discovered, and I don't want to be searched. And we used to meet random strangers on the internet before that.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. We sort of don't do that anymore. I mean, the only interaction people have with each other now is hurling insults at each other on YouTube comments. and that is the unfortunate state of the internet right now.
This is true.
Hey, I socialize with people today. I call someone an asshole. It has become a very degenerative space. It wasn't always like this. That's the reason why I actually really liked Twitter when it came around, because it brought that social interaction back.
Yeah, the original Twitter was like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At least for Dubai, we had these tweet ups. People would go and people meet other people in real life. And it was nice to see that happen. But I really do think that Facebook has sort of really, really messed up what it originally set out to do, which was to connect people and put them together. It doesn't do that at all. We've talked about all how things have changed. What do you guys think has improved? What do you think has become better now?
I think it's just the state of computing itself. But in terms of user behavior, in terms of human behavior, in terms of the interaction, nothing has changed. In fact, it's gotten worse, because now we are more dependent on these machines to do stuff than we were before. Like, I remember growing up in the 90s, in the 80s and 90s, and having the computer, but still going down and playing cricket and football with my friends. I mean, I look at my son, right? Right now, we're living in such a paranoid state that I'd much rather him being home, doing his homework or playing with me or working on the laptop or on the tablet, learning how to code or whatever it is that he's doing right now, rather than actually go down and explore and figure out if he can actually make friends. You know, that paranoia did not exist before. It exists now.
And I think there's general agreement, right? Like, that certain things have become decidedly worse for us. I mean, we were just talking about the comparison, right? Like, how the internet was a place where you met people. I mean, he talks about dependency. I mean, we saw the early dependencies. I think we all kind of grew up in a similar education system in a way, but like, we weren't allowed calculators, right? Like, I wasn't allowed a calculator, I think, even until 12th grade. And I'm not going to discuss the merit of those log tables, because honestly, I thought that was like a bit too much.
Person that came up with log tables needs to be tied under a truck and just
exactly
dragged on a road somewhere.
For our listeners, if you didn't go to an Indian education system, basically the log tables were this little mini book which had these, like, well, obviously tables, and you use them to perform complex calculations because you were not allowed a calculator into exams. There are times today when, like, I will sit in front of a series of numbers, and I know I can do them in my head, but I still pick up my phone and plug out the calculator. But when we talk about the good stuff, information, right? So the only thing we had in our hands was outdated information, right? Especially in a world today where information changes so quickly. But even back then, sure, like, information about a volcano wouldn't change so quickly. But then, you know, you were still reading books that were like 5 years old or sometimes longer, and using that as the basis of information. And today you have so much more at your fingertips. Yes, there are times when, as we saw at the start of this episode, we couldn't remember the name of a character who came out in a movie all of 2 weeks ago, right? Like, because we're just like, oh, crap, I'm just going to look it up. But the access to information, of course, there's huge benefits to it. I think, Shaban, you are in that field, I'm in that field, Partha's in that field, where actually having access to this information is tremendously helpful. And I mean, I mentioned the scale as well. I mean, today we're podcasting, we're sharing this stuff via the internet. This would not be possible without these connections.
So for you, to summarize my original question, was what you're grateful for is you're grateful for the ability to have all of this information available to us at any given time. That's just, it was unprecedented, and still is right now.
Yeah,
and the speed of it, yeah. For me, something very, very simple. I like flat screens. I appreciate flat screens every time I see them. And the thinner they get and the more happy I get. I'm like, this is incredible. I used to sit in front of that stupid CRT monitor where your hair would stand on its end if you would get too close to it. And it would probably be frying your eyes anyway. And you don't have that stuff anymore. You just have flat screens, and they're getting bigger and better. So you can now eventually probably have, you know, an 80-inch flat screen that is an art piece during the day, and it's your TV screen during the evening. And I believe Samsung was debuting something which is basically a cabinet And the glass was essentially a TV screen. So you'd slide it across and there would be a TV, and it was completely transparent, no wires, nothing. For me, I think that's the biggest thing. It's allowed us to move away from paper in a way that is incredible. We'd still be going through hundreds of thousands of tons of paper probably every day if it wasn't for flat screens being so amazing. The other day I was at a client meeting, and the ability for me to just turn my laptop into a tablet just by folding it around and having that super flat screen and showing people maps and images, because a lot of the stuff that I do is related to imagery, and being able to pinch to zoom in, I was just marveling at that. I was like, damn, you know, if this stuff wasn't there, I couldn't do my work the way I can, and I can't illustrate certain points the way I can. And for me, that's just mind-blowing. I mean, I love that.
No. So I appreciate all the hardware improvements that have come in. That includes all of those fun stuff. So whether it's the new cell phones or the LCD technology and all of that. But then my biggest takeaway from all of that is that it's now increased our dependence on this.
I think you touched on an interesting point too, Shaban. I would think of it in a slightly different way, in the sense that, you know, it's not that like you wouldn't be able to do it, but the kind of work that you do would only be available to like a select few people. You had to be this ginormous company that could afford like a room full of equipment to all this happen, right?
You could never.
And compared to that today, like you as an individual can pull this off. And I think that's amazing, isn't it? Like, I mean, that's not something we could even imagine. I mean, we talked just now about the iMac, this all-in-one computer. And today, like, my flat screen is that exact computer.
I think a flat screen is more powerful than the old iMacs.
It's not just that it's amazing, but that the fact that any individual could pick one up.
Yes. And the flat screens, it's not the end of it now. They're coming out with folding screens now that you could sort of wrap around your hand or your wrist or integrate into clothing.
I don't think that's really going to be a thing, to be honest, because it's not entirely.
I shall talk to you in 5 years, sir.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, yeah, you know, there was a time, I think, when we thought that like an iPad would be a ridiculous idea.
I'll probably eat my mic at that time.
Okay, I'll get some ketchup and mustard ready.
Make sure you eat your gaming mic and not the nice one. Yeah. Speaking of flat screens, do you guys remember the first like cell phone? Like, what was the first cell phone you guys had?
Dad had a 3110 Nokia. I had an Ericsson flip phone, which is super cool because it's purple and rat colors.
Oh, that's better than that was.
Oh, mine. He's one of the newbies.
I was thinking, like, you remember those Alcatel bricks where the antenna was bigger than the phone? But okay, never mind.
I'll tell you the exact specific model that I used to use. It was basically the Motorola. I think it was the 8100. The Dynatac or something like that. I'm not really entirely certain. And then they had these new versions of the flip phone that came out. It's basically just a small little piece of plastic that would flip out and could. But again, you had a pull out antenna and stuff on there. So that was my first ever phone, a Motorola flip phone from the 1996.
Oh, geez, no, you guys have got cell phones way earlier than I did. I mean,
we had a car phone. So we had to like get the car taken in, and this whole antenna was installed on the top. And then on the passenger seat, there was this like little brick.
So my first ever phone that I ever bought for my own self was the Motorola MicroTac, which basically came with two batteries in the pack, a slim one and a thick one. And it had the pull-out battery. And it was a flip phone, essentially, because it had the small piece of plastic that kind of covered up on the top. And then my aunt came in from the US, and she got my brother the Motorola StarTAC, which was the first true blue micro flip phone with the battery on the front. It was pretty insane.
My first flip phone, I think, was the Motorola Razr. Because prior to that, I always just did the simple handhelds. I didn't get the concept of using a flip phone. I don't remember who was telling me this, but I think the one thing I miss about flip phones, you can't slam a phone on anybody anymore.
I know, right? It's so... So the last time I got angry with somebody on a phone call, I ended up losing my phone because I threw it so hard on the ground. Since then, I just kind of controlled it.
So you did technically slam the phone on someone, except...
I did. And I remember which phone it was. It was a Sony Ericsson P1i. It was one of the first touchscreen phones with a stylus that came inbuilt. And I used to love that phone. It was one of the best phones that ever came out. And I miss that phone, actually.
Do you remember the devices we all used to own before phones? Can anyone guess what that was?
What, that Casio handheld thing where you fed in all your contacts and used the calculator?
Exactly.
The digital diary?
That was the first laptop, sir. That was the first laptop. It was a digital diary where everyone carried around. And it'd be just this magical device that you could put information in and it would record it. And it was... I don't know what people would do, but I remember, I think before the day, I think human beings are conditioned to like sort of work with tech, but I gave it to someone as a gift. I think it was a cousin or someone.
It was
or a
great gift.
Yeah, it was an excellent gift, yes. And I walked in and we were doing a slumber party. I was sleeping over at the guy's place and he was on a stupid digital diary at 2 a.m. in the morning. I was like, what the fudge are you doing, dude? And he's like, I don't know, I'm just sort of playing around with things.
It had a 3-line display and
and a hardware keyboard, really.
Yeah, with a scroll button on the side.
Yeah, and a memory that wouldn't go kaplut if you took the battery out. It would still, everything would stay.
One last thing, I was talking about the fact that we were going to do a retro episode with a couple of people, and I was asked this question. Do you guys remember Tamagotchi?
Yes, of course I do. The virtual pets.
Do you remember how it was such a thing,
though? No, I never ever played with it. I hated it.
It was a huge thing. It was a big deal.
I hated it at first, too. But then, like, just everybody had one, right? Like, it just became a thing. It was like the... What's the equivalent of today? I don't know.
It was a Farmville of today. It was a Farmville of today.
Still not the same, though. Like, you had to literally pet that. You had to pet that and feed it and water it and purr.
Wow. Play with it. No, it was digital. Well, no, some of the Tamagotchi toys were digital. You just had 3 buttons on it and that was it.
You just had to respond to the emotion.
Yeah. It was just emotional blackmail in a little digital box for you.
I mean, I don't want to, like, make parallels to AI right now or anything like that. But, like, I think it's just fascinating because it was... I think it was disjoint from, like, traditional technology at the time, right? Like, we grew up with PCs and games that you could play on PCs, and this was like this physical device that you bought specifically to do this. It was also like this thing where, like, suddenly it would, like, randomly get into this emotion and you had to go deal with it, and it was not exactly a simple fixed program, right? It was, everything was different, every pet was different in some way.
You know what the appeal for Tamagotchi was? It was the first pocket stand-in, cheap stand-in for what we now know as robots and AI.
Yeah, right. That's what I was thinking. Like, for me, it was like, that's the parallel in some ways.
This would be really cool. If your assistant could actually do that. Now, the reason why I don't interact with my assistant is it doesn't throw emotional tantrums. But I think if Cortana started, let's say, or Alexa started behaving erratically, it would make them a lot more human. You want to ask it questions. Right now, I just Google everything, even though I know Cortana and Alexa and whatever Android's called right now are there. I don't want to talk to them. But the Tamagotchi toy, oh my God, if it was dying, it was crying, it's just, you had to do something about it. They figure out a way for a little plastic device to tug on your heartstrings, and that's very impressive.
Anything else we want to talk about?
Yeah, all right. The one thing we do need to cover is things that have stood the test of time. And it doesn't have to be in its original form, some version of it.
The keyboard and mouse.
I don't use a mouse anymore.
I think keyboards and mice have stood the test of time. People thought in the year 2000 we'd be interacting with AI remember that Tom Cruise movie, Minority Report. Everybody thought that in the year 2000 our user interface would be the thing from Minority Report. We don't do that right now. Keyboards and mice technically stood the test of time.
The difference for me, I think, or why I would disagree with that is because the reason that hasn't happened is because that technology, whether you're talking about gesture technology or AI or whatever, is not there yet. But I can't make the argument that, like, if it was there yet, like, we would still be using keyboards and mice. We already see, like, what Alexa is doing in particular, or everybody's doing with voice assistants today, is it's picking up like crazy. People don't want to type. In fact, they are very happy to issue voice commands.
Yeah, but not in a business environment. You do not walk into an office. Now, I'm talking about mainstream media. I'm not talking about people who are enthusiasts.
Yeah, but by that argument, printers have stood the test of time. There are still printers in every office here. I don't think something can be classified as stood the test of time just because it's here. The question is, will it stay here if the other stuff changes? So, like, if voice becomes that good, will we still type? I don't think so. And I think we're already seeing that trend changing.
I think there are certain devices, it's just the way we're conditioned to interact, they're just a lot quicker. Their leap motion has been around for a couple of years now. There's other gesture-based tech that's been around in phones. Nobody uses it. People still prefer to use a keyboard and a mouse. It's the fastest thing. And until there's something faster than that, it will not change. It's all about what can replace it and do it better.
I haven't used a mouse in 3 years.
Depends on your line of work, Chirag. I can't physically work if I don't use a mouse. I use CAD. It's impossible. You have to be a physically crazy person if you're going to do CAD work without a mouse. It's just, you cannot do it. It's impossible.
It's not impossible. Like, I can run CAD on my iPad, dude. Like, I'm not saying that they're bad input devices. I'm just saying that, like, they will go away. It's just the other tech has not...
And I'm telling you that for a lot of the real work, it is not going to happen. A voice command is not going to replace Photoshop. A voice command is not going to replace stuff that's happening for a lot of the production work that happens that we use computers for every day.
No, but I'm saying, like, we're talking about a keyboard and mouse, and you're saying if you don't have it, like, work isn't going to get done, and I'm just disagreeing with that. I think you're already seeing that trend changing.
And I'm saying that even if it does get there, it's still not going to change a lot of the work that we currently do because we need these devices. We do a lot of complex things with a keyboard and a mouse that you just can't do with your voice or with a touchscreen for that matter.
So you're agreeing with me then, Shiban?
Yes, I agree with you, Partha, and I'm disagreeing with Chirag on the voice command bit.
Yay!
No, but that the voice command bit isn't the point. The point is keyboards and mice have stood the test of time, and I'm disagreeing with that.
Why?
Because I haven't used a mouse in 3 years. But I'm not the only one, right? My point is, like, and I'm talking 3 years, dude. I haven't felt the need to use a mouse. Like, and it's not like I've stopped working on the things I used to work on.
But Chirag, you're not the representation of the entire industry. Nobody else, sort of, if you look at the numbers... They're hugely skewed towards people using keyboards and mices and traditional
people using, yeah, but I'm saying the trend is changing. I don't think keyboards and mice are going to stand the test of time.
That's fine. I mean, they may not stand the test of time, but we're talking about stuff that has made it through to this day.
I mean, there has been no design changes. There have been technological upgrades, but the design is essentially still the same. It's still the same layout. It's still the same click. It's still the same feel and everything. I mean, that hasn't evolved. He doesn't agree still, but it's okay.
Yeah, no, I don't agree because I don't think that statement is right. Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you think printers have stood the test of time?
Printers? No, not really.
Yeah, printers.
No.
Not really, right? Walk into any office today and if you don't find a printer, let me know. But you will find one. That doesn't mean it stood the test of time.
There are no printers in certain offices that I go to. You may find a copier. You may find a copier, but you will not find a printer. Because the copiers now are being able to put...
My point, though, is like just because the stuff exists doesn't mean it has stood the test of time. Like your argument is the keyboard and mouse is still here, therefore it has stood the test of time. And I'm saying, well, printers are here. It has also
There's still updates to the design. There's still updates to the way it's being used. And a lot of people still go out. And when they buy a machine, they buy a keyboard and mouse as well. They don't necessarily go out and buy a printer.
Printers.
Not necessarily.
People are still buying printers.
No,
why are they selling them in the shops if nobody's buying printers?
That number has come down by half.
I think, for me, the two things are the same and you're arguing it's true for one and not true for the other. I have a problem with that. But let's leave it at that. I'm fine with leaving it where it is. I'm not going to agree because I think, like, the two things are the same. The same reasoning doesn't hold in one. How can it hold in your case?
Because the reference points are different. That's why it can hold in the two different cases. So let's agree to disagree. I think there's an impasse here.
I have a point. I'll say the wheel has stood the test of time.
I mean, the wheel is the one thing that has stood the test of all time.
Yes, as a technological marvel, it has just stood the test of time.
Great point, Partha. Thank you for that. We're very happy to be agreeing again.
Anyway, I had a lot of fun on today's episode, guys. Seriously.
I mean, nostalgia is always interesting, right? And so I think this episode has so much nostalgia in it, especially for the three of us, because we're sharing our own personal experiences with technology. And I think we've seen some of the biggest advancements when you look at technology. I mean, when you look at the internet and all of this stuff. We've seen the thick of it, right?
I'm probably going to call my brother in a little while and have the same chat with him. So, yeah.
Well, while you're at it, Partha, can you share with us how people can reach you?
Unless you have a dial around, one of those round phones, I don't think that's going to happen anymore. So you can reach me on Twitter as ParthaNS, ParthaNS. That's probably the only way right now that you can do that. Just reach me on Twitter as ParthaNS.
Have you noticed that gradually over the course of time with our episodes, like the number of things you give out as ways to connect to you is gradually decreasing?
Yeah.
Siobhan?
While I go find a Tamagotchi toy to murder and destroy, you can reach out to me on Twitter at my Twitter handle, which is AIRSPECTIV, irrespective, and lodge a protest. I will take it into consideration. Thank you.
Are you going to name your pet Chirag?
That's an excellent idea. I'm going to put a little sticker on that little Tamagotchi toy. Guess what that sticker will be? It'll be of a keyboard and a mouse. my little Chirag toy.
Yeah, I thought so. I can be reached on Twitter at ChiragND. That's ChiragND. If you're into the indie web and all this fun stuff, I'm also on micro.blog at Chirag. That's Chirag. TechTree is on Twitter at D3CHTREE. You can find information about this show, show notes, and all that fun stuff at techtree.show/9. That's it from us.